Welcome back to another podcast. We have taken a couple of weeks off because I thought you were getting sick of hearing from me and interviewing all those fitness instructors. However, Valeria is doing a wonderful job, and more seniors are interested in wellness and fitness. And I think I'm going to ask us at some point to have those podcasts designated separately so that the people who are really interested can find them easily. But we're back, and I'm back with my most popular guest, President Kim Fuller. Kim, welcome back.
Welcome. Good to be here. Thank you.
Good to be here. So this is your second lap around the track. This is impressive, and we commend you for doing that. My first question is that have you had to alter your tennis game to compensate for those arrows in your back?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
But my back's fine because I don't play tennis anymore.
Are you still running your club up in Northern California?
I am. I go up about once a month, every 6 weeks.
So you have two full-time jobs.
Yeah, and I do most of the work from here, coordinating things here.
Okay, well, two full-time jobs is enough, I think, for any person in retirement.
You know.
So the biggest thing going on right now is the governing docs. They're finally out, and I'm sure you're getting questions about them.
Yes, so everybody should have received two packages now. One package will contain the ballot and instructions, and the other package will contain a computer flash drive. On the computer flash drive are the governing docs, the proposed governing docs. Now, the reason we did a flash drive rather than a hard copy is strictly a money issue. We are required to send you the governing docs, the proposed changes to the bylaws and CC&Rs. If we had printed those in a hard copy form and mailed them to you, it would cost about $10 per home. 3,450 homes, you can calculate it's $34,000 to mail it out hard copy form. So by doing a flash drive, we save about $20,000. So that's why you are getting two different packages. So be sure to look for both packages when they come in the mail. There's four items on the ballot, just four. Now, the first item on the ballot deals with all the changes that are on the flash drive. So all the proposed changes for the CC&R bylaws to remove Pulte where we can and to put in the required changes by state law, they're all on the flash drive. So item number one on your ballot refers to all the documents on the flash drive. The flash drive documents do not refer to item 2, 3, and 4. Those are separate items. So what item 1 is about is to try to remove Pulte wherever we can from the documents. So example, in our current CC&R bylaws, there is information about how many votes Pulte gets in a board election. Well, they're not here anymore, so we don't need that information. There will be a couple of places where Pulte will remain in the documents. For instance, if a resident wants to file a lawsuit against Pulte, it has to be done according to the CC&R and bylaws. Pulte will not agree to take that section away. So that's an example. Now, if you vote in favor of all those changes, then that document on the flash drive will become the new CC&Rs and the new bylaws. The other changes on that flash drive are what's required by state law. So the state has made changes to the civil code. We are required to put those in place. The dilemma is our current bylaws don't show those changes. We have to vote those changes in order to make the document consistent. But we're still required, even if we don't vote these changes in, we're required to follow the state code. So an example is how the board meets. There's a change. So our bylaws say we can't meet except for certain conditions. The civil code says added more reasons. So they're not consistent. So hopefully people will see that item 1 is just to remove Pulte and state law changes. Item two is to remove term limits on committee members. Right now, people can be termed out. A lot of people think if somebody's willing to work hard and they're a valuable asset, we want to keep them on committees. So item two would remove term limits on committee members. Item three would be to remove cumulative voting. Now, what we have here is every other year we have cumulative voting. It happens when there's three candidates running. When there's only two candidates running, we have regular voting. Regular voting is what you're mostly used to in most elections. It's one vote, one person.
Is that one vote per household, or if, like, there are two people in the House?
Per household.
Per household.
So each household in an election gets a ballot. Same with the CCNRs. This ballot, one ballot goes to a homeowner, to a household. So in cumulative voting, if two people are running, it's one person, one vote. So if there's two seats, each home would have two votes. You could put one to one candidate, one to another candidate, or you could put just one and not vote for the other one. You could do that. In cumulative voting, you are allowed to put all the votes to one candidate. That's the difference. Cumulative voting, if you look it up, is designed so that a minority interest group could organize and elect somebody to the board. The idea is to have minority representation on the board. Positive and negatives to both. This is something for you to research and decide. The people who believe that the majority should prevail don't like cumulative voting. They just want majority, the top three. People who like a minority interest will want to keep cumulative voting. So if you vote in favor of that change, then cumulative voting would be removed, and we would use regular voting for every election. The fourth item is the rental period from 90 days to 45 days. Currently, homeowners cannot rent their homes for less than 90 days. It's been requested by people who do rent their homes that they wanted it to be 30 days. They felt 30 days was a reasonable amount, especially summertime, hard to rent for 90 days. In the discussion, there is some language in our current bylaws which allow for less than 90 days if you use a management company. So if you use a management company, you can technically rent for one night. So in the discussion, the compromise was 45 days, but the language about a management company would be removed. So if you vote in favor of 45 days, no longer will management company language be in the bylaws, which means there'll be no home that could rent for less than 45 days under any condition. So those are the four items. Now, when you get your information, you will notice that the meeting to count these ballots is November 13. We put this off about 6 months because people are leaving the area. And we're trying to give as much time as possible to make sure we get as many votes back. To pass a bylaw, we have to have 51% of 3,450 homes to pass a bylaw. So to pass the change. So November 13th is the deadline, and then we're allowed two 30-day extensions. So no matter what, this process will come to an end in January of 2019.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a personal question that happened to me, and that is that I got the thumb drive okay, but I threw the ballot away. And in these days of junk mail, I suspect that's going to happen to a lot of other people. So in that event, what should the residents do?
Contact the HOA office. They'll put you in contact with HOA Elections, the company that oversees the election, and they'll get you another ballot.
Okay.
They'll track that. So okay. we can get you another ballot. No problem.
Good.
Yes.
Okay, the next item on my agenda is the slurry seal project. Are there any developments there?
Okay, multiple stories as far as the slurry seal project. The slurry seal project is done. The board has voted for future slurry seal projects, we have hired an engineering company. a civil engineering asphalt company, to examine all the roads in the complex. And as a result, they will come up with a report. We have not got the report yet. It's due in a couple weeks. And they will give their estimate of what needs to be done to what road in what period of time. So then everything will be phased out based upon that report. Their initial reaction is we don't have to do anything this year, even though it was on the books that we would do something financially this year. They also looked at the existing work, and they found no deficiencies in the existing work, because I know that was a controversial topic for some people and for some residents. Now, what happened during the slurry seal project, I will let you know, because it will lead to the fact that the HOA was sued in court over this issue. We had a resident, once the slurry company was started work, we had a resident who was interfering with the work. It's my contention that the board, once in contract, we can't have individual residents decide whether a contractor should be working or whether the work they're doing is satisfactory. That has to be determined by the board. We can't have individual residents deciding that issue. So a resident was interfering with the work. A citation was filed against that resident. It went before a covenants hearing, and in that hearing, the resident was fined $200. The resident felt that his rights were violated and consequently sued the HOA for $10,000 in court. That case was recently decided. The court found in favor of the HOA, awarded no damages, said that the HOA did not violate the civil code. Now, for everybody's edification, a covenants hearing here for the HOA is not like a criminal court. It's not superior court. So consequently, the procedures and the rules of evidence are different. We are an administrative hearing, and the Civil Code, Davis-Sterling, allow for different procedures and different rules when we do hearings under the HOA. An example, in an administrative hearing, you don't have the right to confront your accuser. You do not have the right to cross-examine. And currently, the board believes if a resident files a complaint against another resident, we don't want to give out the information of who filed the complaint. We keep it confidential. We don't want residents in a confrontational situation with each other. So the covenants committee would have to do the investigation, determine what happened, and then make a ruling as a result. But there's no requirement of a cross-examination. So that's one example of where we're different. Now, what this also leads to is this. We just got our insurance renewal. And part of the insurance we have is for directors and officers' liability, for errors in judgment, that kind of stuff. What's required by insurance carriers these days, if a resident threatens a lawsuit, just makes the threat, doesn't even file a lawsuit, we have to notify the carrier that that happened. And the carriers keep track of that on a list for about 4 to 5 years. What the carrier noticed this time was that 5 or 6 years ago, there was very few threats of lawsuits. And in the last couple, 3 years, there's been more threats of lawsuits. Consequently, our premium for that coverage went up $20,000 this year. So what I would urge residents, you have the right to file a lawsuit anytime you want. I'm not going to comment on that. What I do think you should think about is before you threaten a lawsuit, think about that, because that threat has to be turned in, and that will affect our insurance premiums. So you might think about that, because that affects all of us.
Okay. And so those are the big things. I was just going back to some old issues that we had covered last time you were here, but just to get an update. And we'll start with the embezzlement. Has that finally been settled?
No, not settled yet. We're still in the investigation process. Cesar LaRocque is going through settlement hearings as far as the DA. So there's no determination yet on that. The judge actually removed himself because it turns out he found out he had a relative that lived in Shadow Hills, I think was the reason. So he said, I can't comment on the case. So they had to start over with a new judge. But the DA, they're in settlement hearings, which could go on for a little while. So I do not know the outcome at this moment of what's going on with the DA's office. Mm-hmm. As far as our investigation, board last month voted to continue some investigation on the fraud side, and that report's not back yet, and we might not get that back for a week or so. So until we get that report back, we can't say where we're at as far as finalizing the settlement with Associa. Associa has agreed to this point that they will pay us at least $123,000 and some odd dollars. Everybody's in agreement that that's a hard number as far as the fraud amount. We are still investigating some minor dollars just to be sure everything's accurate. Once we get that report back, if the board decides to move forward with more investigation or more audits, that's up to them. If not, then the process would start as far as a final settlement with Associa on what that settlement amount would be. So hopefully, 30, 60 days maybe, mm-hmm. we should have a pretty good idea where we're at.
Okay. And you've got a lot of things going on with the finances. Is there any notable developments there? We're having a small dues increase next year. That's already been published. Everything else is kind of going along as scheduled?
Pretty much. The Finance Advisory Committee, there's six people on it now. I think they're going to have seven. And there's no question, these are experts in their field. I actually applied to be on the finance committee here about a year and a half ago before I did the board, and I was turned down, and rightfully so. These people are really good at what they do, and I'm not qualified. These are CPA, auditors, CFOs, CEOs, and they're a great job in helping us put this stuff together. So they're busy right now. Everything's on track.
Well,
it's on
budget.
We're
lucky to have them. And I guess that's one of the benefits of being in a large community is you tend to get people from all kinds of different backgrounds who can help.
And then the budget process will start up here in a couple months, June, July. Homeowners, you're welcome to come. And this is where all the budget, we have the discussions on what the next year's budget will be. In order to, keep going along.
Mm-hmm.
I am a person who doesn't like big swings in dues. I think if we do steady increases dealing with inflation and or the wants and needs of the homeowners, we're better off.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't like to see $20 decreases and $35 increases, that kind of stuff. I like just steady. But that'll be up to the board.
Mm-hmm.
Recommendations come out of FAC about that budget when it comes due.
Yeah. And just as an aside, I've talked to people who are either thinking of moving here or just moved here. And the two reasons that I hear most often is, number one, we have a lot of rules, which might come as a surprise to some of the people who don't agree with them. But especially if you're not a full-time resident. The fact that there are a lot of rules and there are people who will enforce them for you is a big selling point for this community. And the other thing is how low our homeowners' dues are relative to comparable communities around the desert. So, everything that you're
sweating
over.
I only know one other facility, Sun City Palm Desert, which has a slightly lower dues rate. I would expect that because there's 5,000 homes there, so you can spread the cost over a greater number of people. But other than that, I don't know of another one that's lower.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, with 3,500 homes, you can spread costs over a lot of people, so we get to get the benefit of that.
Yeah.
But at the same point, it's imperative that if we're going to maintain, future reserves without assessments and maintain the facility so people want to live here, dues will have to probably steadily go up, at least inflation.
Of course. Yeah.
Otherwise, you're looking at either a decrease in, facilities and services, which won't be attractive to people who want to live here.
Exactly.
So right now, there's not a lot of homes for sale here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's.
Well, I think, between the finishing of the Jefferson interchange finally and all just the general growth of the retirement population and the desert, things are going to be positive here.
I was told, I guess, one real estate person, that, I mean, their opinion was that there wasn't a lot of homes. I guess I'm not a real estate person, but out of 34, 50 homes, there was like 80 on the market for sale, which they considered to be not a lot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's...
So the last time you were here, the dog walking areas were a hot topic of discussion. What's happened there?
This was the facilities committee. John Peterson's committee did a phenomenal job, got a bunch of dog walking people in a room and tried to work out some resolution. And they came up with one. And it was real simple, was the area of most contention was on Sombra, where the par 3 green was, which was some people considered a potential safety risk and distraction to some golfers. So we put a red curb there. What came out was, from that committee, a red curb. And then on the rest of the golf course, dogs are allowed to walk up to 9 feet along the edge of the golf course. So by giving up one area and giving a 9 feet in the rest of the golf course, I'm told it seems to work.
Issue has been put to bed.
As far as I know.
That's good. Another thing that we have talked about is we've been going to get new gym equipment in the Montecito clubhouse for a long time. It's still not there. What's the status of that?
That's going to be arriving next month. It's just a long lead time. So by the time we finalize the contracts and then order it, you know, you got like an 8-10 week lead time. Mm-hmm. The equipment, we've been told it's ready. They're ready to ship it in. We had to put in some new power because the new equipment had to have some dedicated power circuits, and we did not have those in place. So the electrician's finishing that work, and then next month they'll be bringing the equipment in.
Okay. So all of our Canadian friends will have something new to look forward to when they come back in the fall.
Not in the Santa Rosa. Santa Rosa's not...
Well, it's not that old. Yeah, I mean, this clubhouse just opened in 2012. So.
Well, the equipment is scheduled for next year in the Santa Rosa, and the new reserve study has the cardio equipment listed to change out every 5 years now. They had it originally listed for changing out every 10 to 15. The negative about that is you can start spending more money in repairs than the equipment's worth.
Yeah, plus the equipment gets much better every year.
And that, yeah, and we all live here, and it's nicer to keep it up to date.
Absolutely.
So we chip in a little bit, then we get equipment every 5 years. Everybody enjoys it.
Yeah. You know, one last thing that we've talked about before, but we get new listeners and new residents all the time, and that is, would you address again the subject of the restaurant making money?
I get a lot of questions about the restaurant over every other amenity in the complex.
Well, that's why I think it's good to reinforce this.
So out of your dues, I guess the simple answer is look at the restaurant. You're not paying to eat at the restaurant. You're paying to have it available. You're paying to have the pools available. You're paying to have the fitness equipment available. You're paying to have the tennis courts available. You're not paying to use them. You get to use them whenever you like. The difference is, because pools cost a lot of money. The difference is, in the case of the restaurant and golf, there's an income line on our financials, and there's an expense line, and it turns out to be that totals a loss of $300,000. What you don't notice is, in the case of pools, you don't see an income line.
And nobody expects to see
it. And so nobody expects to. So nobody thinks that, oh, by the way, the pools are costing a lot of money, but I would never think of shutting down a pool. The restaurant is another convenience. It's another amenity that is part of the entire picture as to why people want to be here. If you take away a piece of that puzzle, it changes the picture. So if we all of a sudden don't have swimming pools, there's some people who might not come here. If we take away the restaurant, some people might not get here. But in this environment, the likelihood of it ever breaking even, in my experience, is somewhere between zero and none. Now, what we want to do is try to be as efficient as possible. No question about that. But I will say this, about when I examined the past books, about 4 or 5 years ago, we were paying $12 a month in subsidy for the restaurant. We are now paying $7. And that's 35-40%
improvement
is huge. So committee's done a great job, and then Troon added mm-hmm. to make that a much more efficient operation, and I think better food, better service. So it is just another amenity, just like all the rest of the amenities, and out of all the amenities, the restaurant is about the lowest price amenity we have. Everything costs more than $7 a month. Yeah. The fitness department costs 10, lifestyles is 11, golf's 20, whatever it is. Security is one of the highest. So it is not going to make money. Don't let that bother you. It is, for $7 a month, it's available if you want to use it. But it's no different than having a bocce ball court.
Okay. Well, that exhausts all my questions. Is there anything else? And I know you look to the future. Is there anything else to talk about, or are these the issues that people are talking about now?
This is pretty much the day, the CCNRs and bylaws. That's probably the big issue at the moment, is to try to get ballots back so we can just put that to rest. Other than that, the new board's off and running, and I do commend them. My first two meetings with them, I thought were excellent. That putting politics aside and putting it behind us, move on, try to work together yeah. and find solutions. So it's impressive.
Good.
I'm looking forward to it.
Good. Well, thank you again for coming in and bringing us up to date. And for the audience, again, if you enjoyed this as much as I do, please tell a friend. The way we are expanding our audience is word of mouth. And I have one other announcement I'd like to make. In the next week or so, you're going to see a marketing brochure, our first marketing brochure for Sun City Shadow Hills. They're going to be at various customer-facing locations around. And, you know, the idea is to promote Sun City Shadow Hills to our friends and acquaintances. And so this is the first go-around. This is Marketing Brochure 101. And so I will take the lead on making this better. And so if you have suggestions for how we can improve it, please send me an email, podcast@suncityshadowhills.com will get to me, and we're going to try to make this an attractive place for new people to come to, as well as for the residents here now. And so with that, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.